and welcome to episode 38 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and today I'm joined by David Maguire, Radix's creative director.
Hello.
And George Reef, one of our copywriters.
Hi there.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about what we learned from the recent B2B Marketing Summit, basically looking at trends and tactics that a lot of the speakers put forward. So, David, the three of us, we went to about as many different sessions as we could fit,
yes,
basically between us, and still be kind of relevant to what we do or what we do with clients and that. But which were three of your favourite sessions?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing between us was kind of planned with military precision.
There was a one bit of doubling up beyond the keynotes.
Yeah, I think it was just the one, and
I'm
particularly looking forward to hearing your highlights, because each of you went to talks that I would have maybe have gone to in another life, or if I could clone myself. I think the three kind of highlights that stood out for me, one was kind of a personal highlight, was the Dan Foss talk by Thomas Colster on getting the best mileage out of your content. It was ridiculously oversubscribed. I mean, there were people sitting in the aisle. Everybody just wanted to go and find out how to get a lot out of your content. And what stood out for me was that a lot of what you hear about content marketing comes from marketing agencies, and it's very theoretical. Kind of going, oh yes, more of the buying, you know, these surveys show that more of the buying journey happens before the buyer engages with you, and all of these things, and this many touch points and that kind of stuff. And actually Thomas was able to say, I mean, Dan Foss are a, you know, 80-year-old engineering company. They do heating, ventilation, air conditioning products. And he was able to go, no, this is what has happened with our real world customers, and this is how we make real content that's really useful for real people. It was just so grounded and so practical. I really liked that one.
Well, yeah, because this is actually also one of my favourite ones, and this is the one that we doubled up on. I liked how they talked about how they created their own editorial process, because, and you know, actually, you know, they said we have an editorial calendar. I mean, they didn't necessarily say they had a content marketing plan, but they'd at least gone as far as to have a calendar so that they were lined up and they knew what they were doing, they knew what they had to do. And they're also sort of like getting buy-in to actually get words and content from people within the company so that they could bring their own thought leadership to what they were writing.
Yeah, and it was, you know, just real things that were useful. I mean, they made an app that cost them all of $6,000 to make, and it's been downloaded 500,000 times. Just because it's a very helpful thing for HVAC engineers to have. And for me, I've been writing about HVAC for 10 years on and off. So to see someone doing content marketing really well in quite an old school traditional space was kind of special for me. My second highlight was the talk by Ernest, which was Andrew Last at Ernest. It was a help don't sell message, but really it was about how to target SMEs, and there was just a lot of fun about how really big businesses kind of patronize SMEs sometimes, which was expressed beautifully through the medium of stock photos, you know, and to show how, do you know what, SMEs aren't just florists, but if you go to like big company websites and look at their products for small companies, it's pictures of florists. It's all, there's an inordinate number of pictures of florists, and it was quite hilarious.
I'll tell you one company that is guilty of treating SMEs like that, and it's Twitter, with their business classes for smaller businesses. A lot of the webinars they've done over the years have been so stereotypical in the way that they sort of profile small business.
Mm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It is that thing. I mean, if you do happen to be a florist, I'm sure you're really well catered for.
Everybody else.
Yeah, but it's that thing about, you know, the voice and the tone and the messaging that you put across. Don't patronise people. And I thought they put that across really nicely. The third one was one very small moment within the whole day for me. And that was the DSM presentation, which was, I had to get my Dutch pronunciation now, Jos van Haastrecht. Sorry, that's terrible, isn't it? And it was about creating a movement in B2B marketing. But the thing that was that really has stuck with me since was that he showed a video that they'd made about how scientists can change the world. And it was just so honest. It showed all the downsides to being a scientist and trying to innovate and bring something new and all the risks you have to take and the way that it jeopardizes your own relationships and, you know, and people don't believe in you and all the knockbacks and all the setbacks. And by being so honest like that, it was really powerful. And the talk in general was about the transformative power of storytelling, but including a high degree of honesty in that storytelling, which in the final analysis makes it that much more powerful. So, I mean, out of the whole talk, that 3-4 minute video is one of the things that's really stayed with me out of the whole day.
Okay. George, did you have some favourite moments then?
Yeah, so my favourite sessions of the day, I think the first one that really stood out to me, and partly this might just be because it was the first one I went to and just sort of really kicked the day off to a good start, was a session by Catherine Armand, who's the head of Insider at Bray Lino, and it was a talk on why businesses say no and why they turn down suppliers and object to certain offerings. And it was based on research Bray Lino did from 18 face-to-face interviews. So not just the sort of, you know, an email response, but, you know, also looking at the emotive reasons behind, you know, why these people said, oh, no, this person just wasn't right for me. And, yeah, I mean, it crystallized a lot of thoughts, I think, that we've talked about before that, you know, a lot of content focuses on the rational arguments that go on. So, you know, how much money are you going to save? How much lower is the TCO going to be? And sort of facts and figures. But behind every single suit in the boardroom is a person. And I think a lot of the emotive reasons that were highlighted in that talk really resonated as things that you need to try and get into your content to really show that you understand your audience and what they want, really. And it was just very helpful for all sorts of reasons, both, you know, wondering why. When you're on a call with a client and you say, oh, hey, how about doing this type of content? And they say no to that, but then also why they might say no to your client's products and services and how you can kind of head off that objection in the content that you're creating.
I think that's a really useful thing for marketers and for writers to get their head around, because it sounds a lot like, you know, the old sales technique, the old sales of recognizing hard objections and soft objections. Mm. You know, where someone raises an objection to something, but it's not the real reason they're not buying, it's because they're not feeling it, basically. And so they come up with another thing that's a reason, then you solve that problem for them, and then lo and behold, they find another problem.
Absolutely. It's really interesting you say that, actually, because I think one of the big things that came out that was both interesting but also quite depressing from that front was that one of the biggest objections was literally just that they like didn't like the person that they were dealing with. So, you know, I'm just imagining this poor sales guy trying to solve all these objections, thinking that it's to do with that, when actually they just probably don't like him very much. they just don't have that chemistry, should I say. And I'm not saying any marketers out there should be using that as an excuse for why they don't get work or why their content isn't being enjoyed, but yeah, that was a very interesting one. Another really interesting talk, actually, that in a similar way, I feel it touched on a lot of things that we've been talking about for a while, but kind of did a really good job of just condensing that down into something usable, was a talk by Sticky Content, Emily Shelley from Sticky Content, talking about 5 ways to tell if your content sucks. And, you know, it was a very entertaining talk with a lot of sort of examples of bad content. So really tapping into the schadenfreude of, like, you know, just being pleased you're not one of the companies called out.
And being honest, were there any in there that were a moment of realization for you?
Well, all 5 of them were stuff I've written. No, not really. I was sitting there with my heart beating out of my chest, like, God, I hope nothing turns up that I worked on. Thankfully not. But what was really helpful about that, aside from, you know, just getting a bit of a kick out of, I suppose, knowing that we're not doing anything crazy wrong, which was nice, was also, it just sort of showed a lot of the important questions that you should be asking your clients before you start doing any content for them. So a lot of the issues of why the content on display wasn't very good was because it just missed the audience. It didn't really understand what the audience wanted to hear, or it just wasn't very different to the competition. And so I think, you know, with elements like that, it can be quite obvious from the briefing stage if that red flag is flying. And then, you know, that's your time to jump in and say, hey guys, actually, who are we talking to and why are they going to care? That kind of thing. So that was, a really helpful talk. And I think the final one that was very different, actually, because it wasn't very content focused at all, but I actually think it kind of has a profound effect on how you create content. It was a talk from Dell's experience design and head of global marketing with automation, Katya Moulinar. He was talking about how to support the buyer journey with new marketing types of content and technology. And it was heavily focused on Dell's new process where they have a kind of, I suppose, a marketing engine that's behaviorally driven. So, you know, someone sees a piece of content, depending on how they interact with it, their future emails will all have different types of content based on how they behaved. It's playing into this dynamic content or intelligent content or whatever you want to call it. That I think we've talked about it on the podcast before in previous episodes. And it kind of just showed a few examples of how that's looking in Dell's system and how their audience is responding to it. And there weren't any really obvious lessons I learned from that, aside from knowing that, you know, that's kind of the future and it's happening now and it's going to keep happening and more brands are, I imagine, going to buy into that future. So that's something to pay attention to, I think, in the future.
Okay, well, my favourite sessions, other than Thomas Colster's one from Danfoss, mm-hmm. was Gina Ballard. Gina, you were so nice to me, I can't pronounce your surname properly. Gina, I want to say Ballerin. She was from OnPrompt, and she did a presentation on Stop Lying to Your Customers, Marketing in the Age of Authenticity.
This was one I really wanted to see. You know, Gina's been very active on Twitter. I really wanted to hear what she had to say.
It was really good, and obviously, like, it's kind of going on in partly with sort of like Doug Kessler's, like, you know, being honest kind of thing that he's previously dug out and put forward, but like kind of just explaining how you need to be truthful with your content. Like, she's one of the most quotable things she said, it's not enough to give people content, it must be trustworthy content, because if it's not trustworthy, then if they find out something in the age of like peer review essentially and people being able to talk to other people about products, it's not gonna look good if they find out something about your product or service that you haven't been upfront about, or you've tried to present yourself in a certain way when it's not actually the case.
I think it makes you look better as well, isn't it, if you're really upfront about something. You know, again, you know, you just kind of reference the Doug kind of insane honesty thing. But the thing where, you know, up front, these are the things that are not very good. So now you can believe me more when I tell you the things that are very good. I think, you know, it makes the rest of what you say carries more weight, doesn't it, somehow?
Mm. I mean, basically, if you people talk to family and friends anywhere, and decisions that people are making, that, you know, it's an emotional, even though it's B2B, it's still an emotional decision to make, and people will form relationships, at least in their heads and stuff, about certain brands and that, and if you mess with that trust that they've formed, they're just not going to respond well to it. And so it's the way you would obviously try and help to make your content trustworthy is not just obviously you just being honest in it, but it's listening to things that your customers and prospects might say that you can then put in to show that you're listening, mm-hmm. and you understand what their concerns might be, and that you're obviously then answering those concerns. Other talk that I enjoyed, which is one of the keynotes, was Joe Pulizzi's opening keynote.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. There was a lot in that, but I think a couple of points from it that I was particularly taken with was this idea that you kind of need to maybe hold back on the amount of tactics you might be doing for content, like how many different tactics you might be doing, and that obviously you should actually be trying to make yourself different from your competitors in how you approach things, because else you're just kind of shouting the same thing into the void. I mean, you could apply that obviously not just with like formats and that, but obviously with like topics that you might cover, like if you're not adding something new indifferent to a topic, then there's not much point in covering that topic.
Yeah, I think the whole thing Joe did about content tilt, I think is something that really, at some point, we should probably look into in more depth, and how you do that, rather than just, you know, what's your angle? You know, what is the thing that is really specific about you? I think, yeah, it was great, wasn't it?
And also just the fact that his usual things about, you know, you need a strategy, you know, written down, a mission statement now would be good, really, really good, and also have that written down with your strategy in order to help you keep your content sort of focused and help you remember what your tilt should be, in a way.
I've got to say, I don't think any client that I'm aware of has ever certainly given me, let me know what the mission for their content is. I guess, you know, having a mission statement for your content is a fairly rare thing. Either that, they just forgot to tell me. But it'd be really helpful. That would be, you know, maybe we should ask them for that in future.
It's funny, isn't it, that you know, or at least in a lot of the clients I've dealt with, you know, you get handed this thick tome that's like a tone of voice guideline. But like you said, nowhere does it sort of say, you know, what the content is designed to do once it sounds the right way. You know, what is it trying to achieve? That's a really interesting point. Mm.
And then another thing, I mean, because obviously we've talked about the Dan Foss talk, but I really liked the talk from LinkedIn's Jason Miller, who has recently moved over here and was apologising for wearing a Motorhead t-shirt. And I don't know why he was apologising. It was just like, it's a Motorhead t-shirt, it's cool.
So this was the face-melting...
Face-melting content. And it was kind of like, I mean, he was trying to avoid, in a way, that, like, he wanted your content to stand out, but he still wanted us to avoid the situation in the end of the, you know, first Indiana Jones movie.
Yes, so it's not Raiders of the Lost Ark face melting. It's epic guitar solo face melting.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And basically, he was sort of talking about how obviously you could, you produce like this like really big standout piece of content. Obviously, you know it's standout because it's the piece of content that seems to be getting a lot of interaction from customers and prospects and stuff. And then you think about, well, what else can you do with that to either sort of bring in new audiences or to, you know, keep it appealing to those same groups. And you talk about creating sort of turkey slices of content, basically not gated, and you just kind of, you know, it was basically atomization or repurposing content so that you sort of got the most out of it. And sort of like just thinking, obviously, again, you know, from the start of the process, what you could probably do to turn one idea, one thing, into many different things. But another thing he also pointed out was how, you know, maybe people need to consider, if you've got this one particular piece of content that's done really well, don't always think, because a lot of businesses obviously sell to a lot of different markets in terms of the countries they're in. And you might automatically think you need to translate everything, but actually it might be better to think about what's hot first in one market and then get it translated. So this one ebook that's always done crazy good for them at LinkedIn, and basically they found it was really popular, so then they translated it into a lot of different languages, which has helped them. So yeah, that was one of my other favorite sessions. So has anyone actually got any sort of final sort of takeaways from across the board?
Was there a big thing you learnt, George?
I think probably the big takeaway I took from across all my sessions, at least, because the event, they split into sort of six streams, I think it was. So, you know, all sorts of things between, you know, insights and engagement, multi-channel content, of course, which we spoke about at length. And I think I wound up on a good mix of them, not just the content stream.
You crossed the streams.
I crossed the streams. Never crossed the streams. What I found was, for all the talk of lots of different new marketing strategies, technologies, ways of working, and all of these things, content still seemed to be at the heart of it. And I mean, I think, as David was saying about some of the content talks, you know, people spilling out into the aisles, like all of these people cramming into this room to try and work out how to improve their content. And, you know, even when, you know, the talks I was in about, you know, automation and personalizing dynamic content and stuff, it still all starts with a really good ebook or like a great email to bring people in. And so I think the key takeaway for me was that, you know, content marketing isn't just some fad that's going somewhere. It's really here to stay. But more importantly, you know, there's so much of it now. People are really worried about making sure it's good. And I'm rightly so, I think, you know, otherwise you're just shouting into the void with the same old stuff. So, yeah, my takeaway was we need to make content really good to cut through the clutter. But, hey, hopefully we can do that. Right, guys?
That's what we're here for.
Aye, aye.
Yeah, I think mine was slightly different, but very similar. You know, the out of all the streams, I mean, it's notable it was the content stream that in the end it was just too big for the breakout rooms and they moved it to the keynote stage. It was that big. And that is, yeah, that's because content marketing is popular. That is also, I think, because a lot of people are really worried that their content is not performing for them as well as it should. And I think you're right. I think we need to do content. We, not just that, you know, the industry needs to do content better. Specifically, the thing that I learned that really brought me up short was right towards the start of the day, I think the 10 a.m. session that Octopus Group gave, Billy Hamilton Stent. And it was their talk around the sleepless CMO. And you remember there was the they had that actor in a bed reading the whole day and doing his work. But the idea and the thing that's really worrying is that content marketing is not making the buying process easier. Content marketing and the proliferation of content has made the buying process slower and more difficult for a lot of buyers. Now, that's not sustainable, you know, because one of the reasons that people will buy from you, you know, particularly kind of late on in the buying process, you know, if you're the easiest people to deal with, and suddenly going, no, before you can buy, you have to read this and this and this and research that and do this. That's something that content has to get better or there'll be a backlash against that. You know, you have to produce content that genuinely cuts through, that is genuinely useful. And one of the things that somebody said is that in some senses, different is better than better because there's just so much content around. I don't know to what extent. I think it needs to be different and better or different because it's better. So I'm not sure I necessarily agree, but the whole idea of differentiation of content, standing out and actually making it easier for the buyer, thinking about them, was the big takeaway for me. The absolute imperative that content marketing has to be better than it is now.
I think the main takeaway I found, which was said across several sessions, is listening to people. Is listening to customers and buyers, prospects, whatever, and listening to your sales team if you're in marketing and just actually communicating and talking, finding out what pain points are going on and everything, and actually using that to inform content so that it's actually based in reality. It's a simple little takeaway. I also have some takeaways for how to do presentations that actually work, if anyone's interested. Because obviously we went to a vast number of them, and the ones that worked, they actually sort of tied themselves back to them as a person. So there was a bit of individuality to it. It wasn't just corporate and branded, but they also set it out in such a way that they would have almost soundbite-like moments that you could share and tweet, which was helpful.
Yes. Yeah, some people were just brilliant at going, you know, you almost could tell, here's the bit you're going to tweet coming up, you know, And you could almost see it written down.
But also that their slides would have details about them as well, so that you could be like, you know, like having a Twitter username visible on the slide is actually really helpful because you knew it was hashtag B2B Summit 16 because you've been informed by that earlier in the morning. But trying to find people's like Twitter usernames so that you could say such and such said this rather than just giving their name, so that people who you were kind of tweeting to could obviously see in the greater context who you were talking about was really helpful, but only a few people did it. So
speaking of good presentation tips as well, I think it was in Joe Palizzi's keynote at the beginning, wasn't his big takeaway he started off on was to set the expectation low. I mean, I thought it was a funny one. Are you going to go back to the beginning of the podcast and edit in a little like, oh, warning guys, it's going to be the worst episode yet. It's going to be, just lower the expectation. Is that the secret?
Yeah. If you find, you know, here's the thing, If you find 1 minute of this podcast useful, we will have achieved our objective for the day. I feel a bit bad that we haven't, that with all the many highlights, I suppose it's because we're very content focused, we haven't given a enough love to Carlos Hidalgo, who I thought was excellent. You know, the whole thing about how marketers have to be prepared to be troublemakers and shake stuff up because of the way things are changing in you know, in buying and in selling and in B2B in general, how marketers need to go in and change, and how anybody who's ever changed anything got called a troublemaker.
But he also offers some practical advice on that, because it's like that if you're not sure about something, if you don't think you can just ballsily go and do it, make it a small pilot, just rather than, you know, making it something absolutely huge, just do it as a pilot and show that something like that can actually work to those people that you need to convince.
I think it also ties into what your takeaway was, David, about, you know, needing to be different and to do something a little original. And, you know, I think it's all well and good in a theoretical thing to say you need to do that, but yeah, as Carlos Hidalgo was saying, you know, got to be prepared for a bit of backlash from the crowd that favours old ebooks and white papers, you know, if you're going in and doing something really crazy. So yeah, but I'm sure it would be worth it if you did do it right.
Who was it that had the concept with the take a risk card, where people in the marketing department got given a take a risk card that they could play once a year, and as long as it wasn't like a company bankrupting type thing, and as long as they came back and said what they'd learnt from it, they were free to try something that might not work in a relatively consequence free environment.
Yeah, that was Carlos Hidalgo's one as well, wasn't it? Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
that was a good way to round out the day, I think.
All right, well, that is all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for a monthly email for latest copywriting tips and insights.